This is a reading from Whispers from Eternity. It's one of the prayer demands. It's called Make Me Anything, a Christian or a Hindu, anything to realize thee. And it comes in a small subsection in this book of prayer demands that Yogananda has written called Prayers for Universality. Let me be Christian, Jew, Hindu, Buddhist, Mohammedan, or Sufi. I care not what be my religion, race, creed, or color, if only I can win my way to thee. But let me be none of these if that identity enmeshes me in an enclosing net of religious or social formalities. Let me travel the royal high road of realization which leads to thee. If I am traveling on some bypath of religion, lead me onto the one common highway of realization which leads straight to thee. Send me the sunshine of thy wisdom, that it lead me to the morning of my growing powers, and send me the moon of thy mercy to guide me rightly if ever I am lost in the dark night of sorrow. The reading for today, let me back up for a minute. I'm currently teaching a class called Secrets of Emotional Healing. It's a twice a month class that'll go on for close to a year, based on Swami Kriyananda's little book called Secrets of Emotional Healing. And I've told the class this now several times in only several classes. When I first opened that little book, there's two lines about every secret. So each day has what Swamiji calls a secret for how to heal. He does them on marriage. He does them on many topics. I don't remember them all now, but there's a whole secret series. This one's on emotional healing. So the first week was anger. The second week was anxiety. Every feeling that you could imagine. But in each of the secrets, he literally writes two sentences. And I agreed to do this class, and then I opened the book, and I thought to myself, what am I going to talk about? There's two sentences here. But as I meditated the first week, when the topic was anger, and I meditated on those two sentences, I realized that within that secret that Swamiji was sharing with us was a seed for everything we need to know to walk this spiritual path. And then the same thing was true last week when we talked about anxiety. And I've had that feeling before, and I've shared it with all of you often, that Swamiji has such a way of planting the seeds for our entire spiritual growth in everything he does, a song, a poem, a little two-line secret. But in this reading for today, it's not even subtle between the Bible and the Gita and Swamiji's commentary on it. It's so, it's profound, of course, but it's so broad. And last night, after an experience we had here that I'll share in a moment, I went home and I thought, how to pick this up? This is a year-long course, just filled with so much depth and truth and awe about the path, about the gurus, about their love of us, about the ways that we keep ourselves so contained in just the tiniest little bit of life. And what they're coming to say to us is, look at this consciousness that I'm offering you. This is Christ consciousness. This is not Christ the man. What a major, major misunderstanding to look at that man and try and figure out who he was with a human consciousness, as opposed to listening to him, feeling his heart, looking in his eyes, receiving his wisdom, because that's what he came to give everyone. He wanted to share his consciousness, which he said over and over again, this is not me. I and my Father are one. And he tried to tell the people that in so many ways. But when we think of every great spiritual of the avatars, really, when we think of Krishna and Buddha and Yogananda and others, it's what every one of them are here to do. They're not here saying, look at me. They're here saying, I can bring you, I can help you change your consciousness and therefore attain a level of inner peace, joy, wisdom, love. Everything that you want is coming to you through me. Every one of them said that over all of those thousands of years. Every one of them brought what Christ did, because the question, the title of this talk, is who are the true Christians? So of course we think about Christ, but Christ wasn't trying to say, be like me, the man, nor were these other avatars, but they all came with exactly the same message. And they all came making every effort that they could in this life, in the life that they lived, in that human body, to share with as many souls as they possibly could. Unfortunately, not all that many could hear any of them. But just trying to say, watch my consciousness, feel my love, experience the wisdom. That's how you will know me, and therefore know your true self. I will come back to this altar, but I was thinking last night about the experiences we had. I've been to Israel twice now, and it happened within a one-year period. And both times that I went to Israel, I had some of the same experiences. I don't really want to talk about all of that, because that was many sermons when we first came back. It's so powerful in Israel. But there's two things going on in Israel all the time. One is that there's a constant war about people's beliefs. There's a constant war between the various religions. It's over beliefs. Of course, once you have a belief, you have to have an opinion. And they express their opinion loudly, often, well, as opposed to an experience which takes you beyond belief and opinion. So when you're in Israel, you are bombarded by varying beliefs. And you just learn to flow with it, because it's just part of what's happening there now. But the other thing that happens in Israel is that people of every known and unknown religion and spiritual path come to Israel because of the inspiration there, because of all of the true spiritual leaders, the great souls who have been there and who have left their vibration there. So everybody comes. And in those moments, when you're not in a discussion, discussions are hard in Israel, at least much of the time. But when you're in other moments, when you're in a tiny little church with great acoustics, and you're there with people from multiple other countries, religions, speaking different languages, but you all start singing together, you're beyond belief, and you have an experience of what these masters were trying to show us and give to us. You transcend everything intellectual. You simply, one simply, now I could just be speaking for myself, except the second time I went, we went with 40 people, and we spoke to, I was going to say the multitudes, but we didn't, but we spoke to many people, and everybody shared the same thing. Your heart is just burst wide open. That's what happens in these extraordinary places, none of them really like Israel, where the inspiration that was and forever will be there is there. And music, maybe more than anything, that takes people out of their minds and into the experience that is waiting to be had, becomes the living example of what it is to be a true Christian. You're not debating it anymore. You're not trying to figure out these words, even that Swamiji wrote. Do I agree with that? Gee, have I ever experienced that? You're in your mind, you're reading it. No, it's not like that. You have the experience. And you know it. It transcends the mind. It transcends the thoughts, the arguments, mental arguments. And it's so magnificent to touch it for those moments that there are very few people, at least that I've met, not just amongst the 40, but amongst hundreds, at least, that I've spoken to over years who have been to Israel, maybe more, who just, their hearts aren't longing to go back. And what is it that they want to go back to? This tiny little country that's the size of New Jersey, where you're never quite sure when a bomb's going to drop, where you always have to listen to people's own opinions about who's right, who's wrong, why, and the history. No, that's not it. It's because you move around and you meet people and nobody says, what religion are you? Where did you come from? Nobody cares. Your hearts are open and you have an experience of that oneness. I was listening to Barat once. He told a story of when he went on pilgrimage to Israel with Swami Kriyananda. This was many years ago. And they came to the Jordan River, where, of course, everyone wants to get in and be baptized. And he told this story that they went, this was quite a while ago, and they went and they were there with Ram and Dhyana, both of whom were raised Baptist, and both of whom have that fire that you can imagine in a Baptist church. They're big souls, fabulous souls. And they were in the river, and you walk into the river, you're in these white gowns that they try and sell you, but usually rent to you. And you go in, and Bharat said, you know, they were in there singing about baby Jesus, some song, I don't remember, because I'm not Christian, I never sang it. But they were singing the real Christian part of it, and then each person would go in and they would dunk them under the water. It was full immersion with Ram and Dhyana then. And then the person would come out, and then Swami Kriyananda would be there chanting Om and blessing them at the point between their eyebrows. And Bharat said, everybody was looking, and people would come over and go, what denomination are you anyway? And really, that is a very hard question to answer for most people, because it falls kind of in the category of what Buddha said about many of the questions that were asked of him. The mind that asks that question will never understand the answer. And it's just true. You want to go, you wouldn't understand. You know, we can say self-realization, but we really mean it. I mean, that's the point. It transcends the teaching of any one religion. Last night we had an extraordinary experience here. We took what every year has been what we call Guru Day, and it is Guru Day, but it always happens at night. And we, of course, couldn't be outside with 150 people the way we usually are, so we brought it inside and we did it virtually, and you can see behind me probably 75% of what the altar is. We always have big altars, but it, as I think you can see, this altar just envelops me. Maybe you can't see it, but then you'll take my word for it. It's big, and it was, and it's a day that's dedicated to honoring the gurus. It's a very precious, deep, I mean, as you could imagine, you're honoring your guru. So in India or in here, it's always very meaningful. And we did that here last night. And we had, Asha gave a few of the talks. Sai Ganesh gave a talk. James did a little 10 to 15 minute talk at each of the masters. It was an evening filled with devotional music, with candle lighting, with all of the energy that even went into creating this beauty. So one felt the experience before the evening began. And please watch it if you can. But when Sai Ganesh started talking, he was talking about Babaji. And he, it was a beautiful talk, really, I want to say very well done, but it was so inspiring. Just kind of easy, his demeanor and the words and the lesson. And he told a story about being in Badrinath and hiking up several thousand feet from there. And the story was about temples that are dedicated to Babaji and that whole area. But, and Sai Ganesh has actually very well informed about most places in India and all of the Indian habits and customs. And he started seeing a flag that he had never seen before. So he did what he would do. He got very curious. He was looking into it. Anyway, the most important part of that story is that hiking all the way up and hiking all the way back, he was seeing more and more and more of the flag, or at least he was noticing it this time. And he got back to the town and he realized everybody had a different story about what the meaning of the flag was. Now that story in and of itself is just a beautiful commentary on who are true Christians. Everybody thinks they have the truth and it's a kernel of the truth. But when you get down to it, it can be their truth. Or their thoughts, that's fine. But there's no one truth. It just doesn't exist, and he discovered that. So that was very meaningful. But then he went on to quote, he moved on in his talk with a quote from Sri Yukteswar to Master in the Bhagavad Gita. This is not the exact quote, but it's close enough. He said, Sri Yukteswar, speaking to Master, said that Babaji, he was speaking about Babaji, he said, he's beyond the perception of your dwarfed vision. He's beyond the perception of your dwarfed vision. He was saying, he was saying this to Master at some point. He's so big. You can't speak of it. You can't see it. You can't imagine it. This is who Babaji is. Now, I'm not going to give Sai Ganesh's whole talk, but I hadn't really read the reading carefully yet until I went home. And when I went home, I said to myself, that's a talk that fits, just fits in here so perfectly, because as he said, and I'm paraphrasing him, but it's the point for today, Babaji is so huge, he's so big, and yet he's not really related to any culture, to any religion. Everybody kind of wants to claim him. Many people speak of him as being Indian, but is he? He was the one who was responsible, most recently, for bringing Kriya to the West to teach Westerners in America, in Europe, all over the rest of the world, people of every culture, religion, color. So who is that man? I remember many years ago, we had a couple in our congregation who were getting married, and their family came, and their family had no idea. I mean, they looked at this altar, and you could just see them shaking their heads. But after the service, the brother of the wife of the bride came up to me, and he said, is that person, he was pointing to Babaji, a man or a woman? And I said, yes. And he said, is he Indian? And I said, yes. And he said, oh, he looks like he could have been from Southeast Asia. And I said, oh, he is. I mean, it was just like that. I wasn't trying to be. I played with him a little bit, and then I tried to explain, of course, knowing that I couldn't. But, and if you think about it, Buddha's the same way. How many people have a statue of Buddha adorning their home, their gardens, wherever? They don't know anything about Buddhism. They're not Buddhists. It doesn't matter. There's something about these great saints that call to us. And while we may not know very much about them, it always feels like they're talking just to us, because, in fact, they are. And it's a very challenging notion to get your mind around. There's another story that I'll share. I've shared this before, so some of you know it, but it's very telling. I was working at Kaiser in a clinic there as a physician, and I walked into a room and I met a patient and I was talking to him a little bit. I don't remember how this started because the story itself is very unlike me, but I know the story. I was there and I know it happened. I must have said something, I must have quoted Christ. Now, why I would do that in an urgent care clinic right off the bat, who knows? Maybe it was so I could tell this story many times. But I did. I quoted Christ, and this man lit up, and he said to me, oh, are you a Christian? And I just thought for a moment, and I said, I am, but I don't think you would think so. And he wanted to have a conversation about it, but this is an urgent care clinic. We had 15 minutes, I said. Let's save it. If we have time, we can talk later. I sent him off for some blood work, whatever needed to be done. He came back. We did the medicine. Then he says to me, so tell me, do you believe that Jesus Christ was the only living Son of God and that he died on a cross for our sins? And I, just like this, I said, no, I'm sorry, I don't. And he paused for a moment, and then he said, how did you know I wouldn't think you were a Christian? I mean, just, of course I knew he wouldn't think I was a Christian. But I will tell you, as somebody who was born and raised Jewish, I know I'm a good Christian. I know I am, meaning I'm doing my very best to live. I'm certainly not there yet, but I'm consciously, thoughtfully, actively, literally every day of my life, as are all of you, doing the best I can to live according to Jesus' teachings and to his consciousness. When I was in Israel, I was in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and there's a room there where the Greek Orthodox have this room. It's all, they're still fighting over the temple, let me just say that, but this was a Greek Orthodox room. And I went to walk in, and you know, they have a very big habit that they wear. They're rather imposing in some ways. And he stops me. He didn't speak any English, and I didn't speak whatever language he... And he crosses himself, and he looks at me like, you? And I went, oh, yeah. Now, let me tell you, I don't even know how to cross myself. I don't know if you go up or down first or sideways first. I'm not sure, but I did it so fast. And then he just backed up and let me in because in that instant, it was instantaneous. But I thought, yes, I am a Christian, and I'm not going to let that man define what that means for me, because most people have taken this huge, infinite consciousness, us too, me too, of course, that's what we're doing here. We say it all the time. We're only in this body as long as we need it, and we need it until we're totally free of this. So we're not, but we're working on it. But we have taken what is literally infinite Christ consciousness, and we've brought it down to this minuscule, tiny little thing of a body. And then we give it all of its labels and we try and make it real. And these great teachers come and say, no, 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 don't do that. Listen to me. Feel me. I'm going to help you in every way that I can. Recently, I've had, we've been doing meditations for, because nobody can come together in person, we've been doing more online meditations for more groups of people. Just, obviously we love to meditate, but also as a way of helping people hold on to their inspiration, their dedication to meditation, their enthusiasm, and us, so that we're all connected, that they remember there's a temple here, and not the few of us who are in this temple, we haven't forgotten about them. So in one of the groups, we realized that a lot of the people were not necessarily doing all of the practices. They just hadn't developed the habit, they don't like them. I never do a lot of the practices that you learn if you come here and we teach you meditation. Hung Sa we start with, energization, the Om technique, something called Mahamudra. We just go through a lot of techniques leading up to what is called Kriya Yoga, this beautiful meditation technique. And a lot of people come to Ananda to quote-unquote get Kriya, but they don't want to do the techniques. So I thought to myself, how can I help inspire them when I'm teaching them and leading them? So I say we because Sai Ganesh and I are just doing this group right now. We started a few weeks ago, we did Mahamudra. This past week, we did the energization exercises. We'll move on through each of them. I was amazed at what came to me, at what I learned, at what I wanted to share when I had to think of how to communicate. Why would this great avatar come and say, this is what you need to do to awaken this energy, to neutralize everything that's holding you back from attaining Christ consciousness, from knowing true joy? Why did he tell us to energize? What is in the energization exercise? Well, it boils down to the fact that it's everything. everything's energy, and as we're trying to learn, remember that we are that and learn how to manage it. Why are we saying a mantra called Hung Sa? What happens? What did Master tell us? That between every inhalation where we say Hung and every exhalation of Sa, there's a pause. And he said in that pause is Christ consciousness. And I could go on through every one of the techniques as I was diving deep about what is in them and how it's bringing us closer and closer to that state of Christ consciousness. We're not there, but we've been given every conceivable tool through the great love of these masters that keep coming back to show us the way. It's not to memorize a bunch of words. I don't care that I don't know how to cross myself. I felt perfectly fine going into that room, that temple. I'll just close with this. Somebody once I heard, I can't remember where, who, and I wasn't there. So if every detail's not right, so be it. But when Swami Kriyananda's mother passed, they had a service down here. They lived down in the Bay Area. And it was in whatever religion they were, I don't remember now. I think it was some Christian denomination and not Catholic. His mother was very devout, so this would have meant a lot to her, this service. But at some point in the service, whoever was leading it said, only Christians should do this next thing. Well, many of the people from Ananda thought, well, I'm not really that kind of a Christian, so I won't do it. And when they walked out, Swamiji said to them, don't ever let anybody define Christianity for you, or your Christianity, or what it means to you. Those are just words. Those are just beliefs. What we're practicing is how to get from here to that state of Christ consciousness, which every one of these masters and every great avatar ever, they all came to tell us the same thing. We say every week, Jesus appeared to the great master Babaji. Jesus didn't stop and try and figure out what religion he was. He appeared to Babaji and said, we need to send emissaries again. Of course they did. Of course. They're all living in one consciousness. They are unitive. We are still dual. But that's our goal. And we have to remember that. It's not a belief. It's not a religion. It's not a set of rules. It's opening the heart. It's listening with the heart. It's developing ears to hear, which means allowing energy to flow so that God's grace can descend.
He who would slake his thirst now and forever, let him not fill his cup here from this well. From living water sipped in the silence, in spirit and in truth, break ego's spell. Though fallen deep in sin, by man abandoned, if longing for his grace, truth be your guide, he can redeem you from By his side, he can redeem you from every